here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zach's Friday Finish Line. Hi, I'm Ryan McQueenie, an associate stock strategist here at Zach's, joined by one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, November 2nd, and we are here to recap this week's biggest stories from the investment and financial world, another very busy stretch of earnings reports, and an interesting week for stocks as Wall Street seemed to find a bottom on Monday and then tallied three consecutive days of gains.
Yeah, it was a brutal October, but it ended better, I guess.
Yes.
So the political noise really getting louder and louder as the next week's midterm elections approach. We are definitely pro go vote podcasts, so make sure you have a plan to vote next week.
Do you know
if
your
you
polling
haven't
place,
already?
Ryan?
I do know my polling place. I have a plan to vote. I know when I'm going. I know where I'm going. So
that's awesome.
We are good to go. That does seem to be adding a certain level of uncertainty, which might even be muting this rebound. Wall Street's least favorite word, uncertainty. Mm. It also seems like we're eyeing today's jobs report very cautiously. Should be out in a little bit here after we're recording. Probably out by the time you hear this, though. So as hotter wage growth does seem likely, and that would stoke fears of rising interest rates and an even more hawkish Fed, which I think some people would say was the whole reason for the October selling boom.
With that said, though, we had plenty of good news this week, too, including a major acquisition in the tech sector that breathed some fresh life into a lot of beaten down software and cloud stocks. So, Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So IBM and Red Hat are coming together to make a beautiful hybrid cloud
baby.
Yeah. So IBM plans to pay $190 per share for Red Hat. That would be a roughly 63% premium to Red Hat's Friday close. We heard about this over the weekend and then got some confirmation on Monday morning. The deal values Red Hat at $34 billion, making the open source tech firm by and large, IBM's biggest acquisition ever, and one of the four largest U.S. tech mergers of all time. I believe the third largest if you don't count AOL Time Warner, which is kind of a telecom merger.
Yeah, so. AT&T Time Warner.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure. Sorry. I got my acronyms that start with A. IBM, why? I guess it would be the next logical question to answer here.
Yeah.
Believes that Red Hat is worth such a steep price tag, that 63% premium I mentioned, because a combined company will, quote, change everything about the cloud market.
Casual.
Yeah, those are big statements. Specifically, IBM hopes to leverage Red Hat to help it become the world's largest hybrid cloud platform provider, as we kind of hinted at there. So let's get the basics out of the way here with the cloud market. IBM is a major cloud platform provider. Its competitors, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Oracle, these companies all operate major public cloud products, meaning that other businesses pay them for access to their infrastructure via the internet. This has obviously become an extremely popular choice among enterprises in recent years. I should say also that some of these companies are also engaged in building and developing private cloud systems, which are infrastructures designed or built specifically for individual use in order to satisfy capacity or privacy needs. So what I mean by that is, like, there are some times where you might have to keep your cloud computing on a private infrastructure because the data that you're holding is too sensitive, or you don't have the capacity, a public cloud doesn't have the capacity, or the reverse of that, you might have to have certain stuff on private cloud platform, and you know, that's, you need more capacity, so you then pay for access to a public cloud platform too, and now you're using two different cloud platforms, and how do you do it? It's confusing.
Yeah.
Boom, hybrid cloud. So basically, how the term hybrid cloud just kind of refers to any instance where you're bringing a public and a private cloud together, and it's being used simultaneously. And that's where Red Hat becomes an interesting target for IBM, because it's making products already that are designed to help customers manage multiple cloud platforms at once. So it does seem like an ideal match given IBM's hybrid cloud ambitions. I believe they're just swallowing Red Hat into their hybrid cloud division. The CEO of Red Hat is staying on board and will report to the IBM CEO. It's all wonderful. They were already business partners for years before this. They know each other well. It's all just fine and dandy. It seems to make sense to me, given what everyone's saying about it. I think analysts said the same thing. And really, the only question mark there is it worth a 63% premium?
Sure.
That 63% premium is obviously exacerbated a little bit by the recent market pullback, a little bit of volatility that has affected Red Hat specifically over the past few months. You would imagine...
even more specifically, tech stocks.
Yes, of course. And you would probably imagine they started talking about a price tag before all those things happened. Mm-hmm. So those are some things to consider. But as you mentioned, Maddie, one of the other things that got people excited, analysts excited, and investors excited was that this really proves that these kind of more specific, smaller tech firms, $34 billion isn't small, obviously, but these kind of more specific, I don't want to call Red Hat a niche company, but these more niche companies in the tech area could also be potential takeover targets, especially, you know, if IBM's making a move that's going to help them with the cloud, you know, Google and Amazon and Microsoft, they don't want to just sit around and twiddle their thumbs and let it happen. So they might go after somebody else. So a lot of optimism potentially about a bidding war, which might even drive Red Hat higher, or, you know, a lot of optimism about these other cool, fun, cloud tangentially connected stocks, which, as you mentioned, have all been crushed by this volatility.
Well, and I think with Red Hat, I think there were talks previously where, like, Google was going, like, Google had wanted to buy them. So, like, I feel like Red Hat has been a hot commodity for a very long time.
Yeah.
And they've been a pretty well-performing tech stock, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, good for IBM for securing that deal. But like you said, who knows who's going to, I guess, like, come out and be like, well, we are kind of interested too.
Yeah, how about $195 a share? Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, definitely, as you mentioned, they definitely have relationships with other companies. They had a business relationship with Amazon Web Services. They're based in Raleigh, North Carolina. Amazon had shortlisted Raleigh as one of its HQ2 candidates. Maybe a little, hey, we'll move in right next door to our good friends at Red Hat. Probably, I would say the good friends at Red Hat relationship might change with this now that they're a little bit more competitive. But we'll see. Definitely some interesting moves there. And, you know, sometimes you look back at these things in history and you go, well, that was poorly timed because it was right before the whole floor fell out under the market. But typically, a major company like this doesn't make a move like this in a time of weakness. Typically, you're making these moves from positions of strength, mm-hmm. and that should be a good thing for people interested in IBM, but interested really in just any of these tech behemoths at all.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Moving on, speaking of tech behemoths, moving from the world of this infrastructure to the internet, the social medias, we had Facebook reporting this week.
The Facebook. I feel like with all the social media guys, we're just going to start calling them, starting them with the Twitter, the Facebook,
well,
the
it used
Google,
to be the Facebook.
YouTube.
And then, and what is his name? Sean Parker said,
no, drop that article. Facebook reported its Q3 financial results after the closing bell on Tuesday. The social media giant, they posted Q3 earnings adjusted of $1.76 per share, and this marked a 10% jump from the year ago period, also beating the Zacks consensus estimate by 30 cents. Facebook saw its third quarter revenues jump 33% from $10.3 billion in the year-ago period to hit $13.7 billion. But this did fall short of our quarterly estimate, and that called for $13.8 billion. And I know this kind of scared investors right away after the report was released. Operating margin was down from 50% in the year-ago quarter to 42% in Q3. Total quarterly costs and expenses jumped from $5.2 billion to nearly $8 billion in the most recent quarter.
If I could whistle, I would have gone, phew.
Mobile advertising revenue made up roughly 92% of Facebook's ad sales, marking a 4% jump from the year-ago quarter's 88%. Facebook closed the quarter with 1.49 billion daily active users, and this represented a 9% climb from Q3 of 2017. Oh, I cannot talk today. Meanwhile, the firm's monthly active users popped 10% to 2.27 billion, which fell slightly below the 2.29 billion some analysts were expecting. Again, another kind of like ding in the shiny surface, if you will, of a Facebook. So that monthly active user miss and the revenue miss caused Facebook shares to like plummet 5% right away after the bell on Tuesday, but it eventually climbed right back. So
you call that a whipsaw motion.
Yes.
It's like you can see people just pressing buttons as they're scrolling down their report. They're like, missed on monthly active users. Sell. Guidance is higher. Bye.
Literally, that's yes. But management, they estimated that more than 2.6 billion people now use Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, or Messenger each month. So that's literally a third of the world's population.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's insane.
Nuts. And they still, okay, so they're at that level and they still tally 10% year-over-year growth in monthly active users. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. I don't get it.
I know, and it's just going to get bigger. So with Instagram still getting bigger, or still growing, WhatsApp probably still growing, and that's not necessary. And that's still with the core Facebook product also bringing in these insane numbers. Yeah. But like with their, I mean, Instagram is only going to get bigger.
Yeah,
it's just, it's insane to me. It's just insane. So like you said, they raised revenue guidance slightly. So in July, the company forecasted that revenue growth, which was 42% back in Q2, this would slow by a high single digit percentage sequentially in both Q3 and Q4. Now, Facebook expects growth will drop by a mid to high single digit percentage in Q4.
So that's not a crazy intense adjustment to guidance.
No, but they're like, well, I think we'll do it just a little bit better.
Yeah, and then I think that's people going like they're probably still being cautious with guidance too. So any budge there is a positive sign. And you know, as you said, we whipsawed in after hours trading, and then they had a very positive day on that would have been Wednesday then.
And I know on the conference call the analyst call.
Yeah.
The call with analysts.
You can call it a conference call. It's a conference call.
Mark Zuckerberg, he put in perspective Facebook's future.
Yeah.
And I feel like that brought like a sense of confidence back.
Yeah.
For analysts, for investors,
heavy emphasis for shareholders. Heavy emphasis on stories out of the
video
Zuck man.
In general. Yeah.
He was big on, I think it was definitely the tone was, all right, a third of the world is on our website. Mm-hmm. What do we do now?
Yeah.
So hopefully it isn't allow tons of malicious or harmful content and horrible advertisers to come in and fry our brains.
Exploit it. Yeah. Right.
Moving on to a company who could use some positivity. Maybe we should play a sad
It's not
song.
Sears or JCPenney.
No. It's another American icon.
Yes.
And that is General Electric. GE reported earnings this week as well. Earnings of 14 cents per share were well below expectations and down from the 29 cents seen last year. Revenue of $29.6 billion also missed estimates by a full percentage point there on the top line. That result was down 4% year over year. Talking about the segments, industrial revenues dropped 4.8%, almost 5% there. Oil and gas revenues did increase about 7%, so there was a positive. Some other positives, aviation revenues up 12%, healthcare revenues were flat, renewable energy revenues improved 15%, and then on the opposite end of that spectrum, the worst performing segments were lighting and power, which saw their revenue drop 18 and 33% respectively year over year. There's been some maneuvering in terms of shedding assets and reorganizing and stuff there, so those comparisons might not all be true one-to-one comparisons, but certainly an interesting look at the different business segments there. Overall, you know, the industrial revenue down 5%, it was worse when you dug into it. The industrial segment's adjusted operating profit decreased 23% year over year, while margins in that segment shrunk 180 basis points from the year ago period. And GE said results suffered due to a decline in power and renewable energy, and then was offset by improvements in profits in transportation, aviation, healthcare, and lighting. So interesting to see, you know, the places where the revenue is being driven higher, they're struggling with margins, and then the margins are kind of being supported by the areas where the revenue is declining, which is not a good combination if you're trying to be more profitable.
Right.
You'd want it to be the other way around, actually.
Exactly.
So frustration, again, for GE. What's worse, slash the dividend again, this time from 12 cents all the way down to a mere one penny per share.
This is a company known for its dividend. This is why, I mean, this is why shareholders invest in.
Yeah. Used to be known for its
dividend. Well, yes. Yeah.
Not anymore, unfortunately. I'm so play a sad song again. If I had a violin, it'd be going. If we had access to a violin player, they'd have been playing this whole time I was speaking. The company did note that the dividend cut allows it to hold around $3.9 billion in cash on an annualized basis compared to the previous payout. That's going to help it pare down the debt. And make those debt payments, which is important if you'd like to stay in business.
Yes.
This was not good, as you mentioned, really decentivizing owning GE shares as it's struggling and you're not getting that dividend really anymore. And shares are now hanging out around their lowest level in a decade. So people showing that they're no longer interested. They don't want to be a part of this turnaround period right now. We've said a couple times over the last couple weeks, trying to call a bottom for this broader market sell-off has not been fruitful. Trying to call a bottom on GE has not been a fruitful task as of late. I feel like we mention this every time we talk about GE struggles, but I hope the best for them. It's an iconic American company, an icon of industry, and, you know, we do hope they turn it around because, you know, sad to see them struggle. That's about as empathetic as we'll get on here. We're gonna move on. Couple more earnings reports. Small little tech company making waves in Silicon Valley. They go by Appel. That's what was on Thursday afternoon they report. I don't know much
Appel-A,
about
a little accent on the E. So investors were really hoping this would be a good report, especially after all the turbulence in October. They were hoping this would be like a shining spot. Appel-A did not disappoint. They beat on both the top and bottom line. So revenues of $62.9 billion, they were up 20% year over year. And this did beat the Zacks consensus estimate of $61.49 billion. Diluted earnings per share came in at $2.91 per share. And this also beat our estimate of $2.79 per share. So that was a good performance there. Services revenues was, I think, one of the big winners of the report. Service revenues of $10 billion. This reached a new all-time high. We were expecting $10.55 billion. So this more or less matched our estimate.
Yeah.
And this includes Apple Pay and Apple Music.
Apple Care,
kind of like all the little things now that more or less Apple is known for besides the big iPhone.
Yeah, once they suck you in, then you got to use all the apps and services, and that's where they've been growing the business most rapidly recently.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is kind of, I think, part of their overall vision. If not, it is their overall vision: create this ecosystem and then charge you more and more money to be involved in it, and then make more and more money off of you. So
right. So international sales accounted for 61% of the quarter's revenue, which was huge.
Definitely, yeah. And it's important to grow in the foreign markets. And also, just kind of on my point about the making more money off of you. Not that to sound malicious. That sounds a little bit malicious.
But they do. I mean, I buy an iPhone every 2 years. So
iPhone sales specifically were 46.9 million units, slightly below street estimates calling for 47.5 million unit sales. And that was basically flat year over year. The key there, though, is this average selling price, kind of hinting at what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They're bumping up the average selling price. Average selling price in the quarter for iPhones was $793, and that was a little bit higher than the $751-ish that being called
for. Just look at what they did for their new Mac Mini.
Yeah.
So it was original. Well, like their older version was started at $499. The new version is now like $699 or something. So it all around. Apple is, well, we know Apple's expensive, but
yes, yeah, just ever so slightly higher.
Yes.
And then of course, you know, the iPhone 10 started with iPhone 10, bumping up the baseline price there for the highest caliber iPhones. That said, it's strong numbers all around in my view. That said, sold off a little bit in after hours. It looked like guidance was a little bit light in terms of revenue. Company expects fiscal Q1 revenue in the range of $89 billion to $93 billion. Looked like consensus estimates heading into the report were right at that $93 billion. So that means the top end of the range is where we were already expecting it.
Yeah.
A bit soft on guidance. So we'll have to see how that plays out throughout the day on Friday.
Yeah. Another big report after the bell on Thursday was Starbucks. They already have their holiday drinks out, holiday cups.
The cups out.
Not the actual holiday cup, but I think they have a line of reusable cups. Was called Stargyle.
Oh, no.
Like an Argyle sweater.
Did you have any of the, obviously I had several pumpkin spice lattes, but did you get a witch's brew?
I did not get a witch's brew.
It looked gross.
It did look really gross with like the chia pudding swirl in it.
It just looked like mostly sugar to me. I try to stay away from those. Although the pumpkin spice latte, I'm sure it's the exact same.
So Starbucks posted revenues of $6.3 billion and revenues grew 11% year over year and also beat the Zacks consensus of $6.2 billion. EPS of 62 cents beat the Zacks consensus of 59 cents a share. And EPS is up 13% year over year. Comparable store sales were up 3% globally, thanks to a nice 4% growth in the U.S. China comps were up 1%, and this is an improvement from a decline of 2% reported last quarter.
And then the other key with Starbucks that we always like to talk about is the membership and the mobile ordering. They want you to keep coming back to Starbucks. They don't want you messing around with that Dunkin'.
No.
They don't want you going to that...
Just Dunkin' now, too.
They don't want you going to that corner coffee store. Mm-mm. Starbucks customer for life. So we look at the rewards membership there. Grew 15% year over year.
Nice growth.
15.3 million people in the rewards program now. Another part of that is the mobile order and pay, mobile pay thing that they do, which correct me if I'm wrong, works in the way that you like load money into your mobile account and
into
then,
the app. Yeah.
Right. So you, which is genius because then you kind of have to spend that. Like you're gonna,
yeah,
you already put it into
we've talked
Starbucks
about it.
Dollars.
And you can, I think you can add, it's either a minimum of $5 or $10. Actually, it might be a minimum of $10. So if you're just like, you know, if you want one drink,
yeah,
you have no money, so you have to put in $10.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
that's
you
a really
go,
expensive
yeah.
one drink.
Yeah.
But, so, you
then
know.
You're coming back.
But I will
spend that extra.
I will say, so we have a Starbucks here in our building.
We do.
In Chicago. So convenient in the winter months, let me tell
Newly
you.
Newly renovated.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I am one of the few people who still use a debit card or a credit card to pay
yeah.
for their Starbucks drinks any time of the day. Most people either do the mobile order and pay like ahead of time,
yeah,
so it's
already,
like waiting
yep.
for them, or they have their phone out, app open, ready to just scan.
Yeah.
It's like, I am one of the few, it's like, it's very minimal how many people who like still stick the card into the chip reader.
Well, let me tell you, mobile order and pay represented 14% of U.S. company-owned restaurant transactions.
That's a good chunk of transactions.
Yeah, for something that was like, oh, maybe it'll be a thing eventually to
no,
be
people
you know,
are
14%.
Like,
yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, they still are like slow to like get the drinks ready on time, but that's just like...
Busy in the morning.
It's very busy.
In a large urban metropolis.
We can't help that.
I just was thinking about, I pass on my way from the train to... the office, mm-hmm. if you include the one that's in our office, I passed 3 Starbuckses.
Yes.
Which is crazy. But all 3 of them have been renovated within the past.
They have.
It was like one at a time, probably intentionally.
Yes.
But they've all gotten a gut rehab and they're very much, and I think it's because they're in like commuter, you got to be in and out into your office types of locations.
They've taken out all the seating.
Take out all the tables. It's very maximized to be... get in and get out, pick up your drink, mm-hmm. and you're done. They look nice.
They all look the same, too. They all have the same design, aesthetic.
It's chic. It's trendy. It's modern. Yeah. It's minimalist.
Because all the Starbucks, I feel like we're, you know, I'll try and wrap this up, but all the Starbucks before, they were very dark wood, dark greens. Like, they all had that same look to them. You would sit, it's a cozy, you would sit in a leather armchair. You would, you know, bring your book, drink your coffee. Now, not so much, but maybe not all Starbucks, but specifically like here in the Loop in Chicago, it's you get in, it's bright, it's, you know, it's modern.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily want to like hang out there anymore. It's to go.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get back to work. I'm busy.
You know?
But they opened 604 net new stores in the quarter, now operate 29,324 stores. Across 78 markets. That's a whole heck of a bunch of stores.
Yeah.
And I will say, I just pulled up the design for the holiday cup. They tweeted it out yesterday. It's wonderful and it's very seasonal. It looks like there's going to be four.
Do you think it's
going
to cause controversy?
No, there's no way. No, this is the holiday spirit all up in it,
yes.
for sure. It's 4 different designs. There's like a green one with a bunch of stars and hearts and like holiday. I'm not going to, maybe we'll throw a picture of it in the article.
There are
4 different ones. They're all very cute and holiday and Christmassy. And now I'm just in the spirit already, aren't
I? Q Mariah Carey.
Yeah. Oh, it's already back in the top 100. I saw that.
Perfect.
Yesterday afternoon.
She's already getting that money.
Yeah. And we love her for it. We would not want it any other way.
No.
All right. So it's officially holiday season. We're not waiting until Thanksgiving.
I mean, the Black Friday ads are already out.
We have the Yuletide spirit on the Friday finish line, and you just won't hear the end of it for the next 2 months from us. but if you have the Yuletide spirit, or if you want us to talk about something else or cover a different story, or if you thought we missed something this week, feel free to shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. You can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. We're also available on other places such as Spotify, ever heard of it? And SoundCloud and Stitcher and Google Podcasts,
so
which is
now.
Where Serial, that's where I listen to Serial. So basically everywhere you can get a podcast is what I'm saying. But that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Zach's Friday Finish Line.